On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, it's training camp week! Yes, actual football is happening on football fields as training camp. We'll talk about that. John Gruden spoke to the media and talked a lot about the defense and secondary. Derek Carr talked about how he doesn't need to be the highest paid player in football, and we prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that PFF hates the Raiders. Go to manscaped.com using promo code WINBAGS for 20% off and free shipping worldwide. Thank you so much to Manscaped. If you love the show, help us love Manscaped because they keep our lights on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The
Raiders! Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto. Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. We are just 47 days away from opening day, opening up Allegiant Stadium with the Baltimore Ravens coming to town. Prime time! Monday Night Football, Soto.
Yes, sir. So, number 47 on the Raiders is long snapper Trent Sieg. So, we are Trent Sieg away.
One Trent Sieg. I always forget his name, which is a good thing if you're a long snapper, right? Like, you want to, like, don't you want to be the most anonymous player on a football team?
I don't know. John Condo made a lot of tackles.
Yeah.
John Condo made a lot of tackles back in the day.
Maybe. That's a good point. Who is the guy you want that wants to be the most anonymous player?
The left tackle.
Holder? Yeah. Yeah, but the left tackle can still, like, pancake some dudes and like lead the way, you know.
I guess.
You can do a little bit.
I mean, normally when you hear an offensive lineman's name, it's because he's making a lot of money or because he fucked up.
Yeah. So we're both playing injured today. I am not wearing makeup for those watching on YouTube. This is a headbutt from Muay Thai training.
Yeah.
Don't lean in with your head is what I learned on Monday night.
Heads down, head in.
Head down, head in, right? Lead with your chin, chest out.
Lead with your forehead.
If only headbutts were still legal. Mark Coleman would probably still be heavyweight champion of the UFC if headbutts were legal.
Big ass head of his. Did I tell you my Mark Coleman story?
No, I'm all ears.
So we were
with your like congested, screwed up throat?
Yes. So we were at a fight in some Indian casino, like fucking, I don't know. Saboba, I think it was Saboba. After the fights, we're walking around and freaking Mark Coleman and Wes Sims. Like, oh shit. So we walk up to him and start talking to him. Yeah. Start talking. This was a while ago. We start talking to him, start taking shots. Get freaking hammered. We call it getting hammered with the hammer.
Hammerhouse. Yeah.
And I think I probably pissed him off. I said some stupid shit.
That doesn't sound like you at all.
And no. And then, like, maybe 6 months later, there was a Pride event, the second Pride event in Vegas.
Yep.
And I was in Vegas, yeah. And I saw
non-MMA fans are like, there. A Pride event? You're at a gay Pride show? That's interesting.
Yeah.
That, Pride exactly. Fighting Championship. It's old Japanese promotion. That's defunct.
Yeah. So I actually saw AJ there in the crowd, like, anonymous, nobody knew who he was. Anthony Rumble Johnson. Mm-hmm. We were hanging out for a little bit, but I saw Mark Coleman in line to like go to a buffet at Caesar's Palace, and I was hanging out, you know, with where we train and everything, all those guys, and saying hi to a couple of fighters here and there, and then I see Mark Coleman, so I start walking up to him like, hey, maybe he remembers me, right? And I guess he remembered me a little too well because he just sat there staring at me like this, and I'm like, I'm just gonna walk away. I turned around and walked away. I was like, nope, I got getting close to that.
He either remembered you, wanted to kick your ass, or he was so hammered that he was just like looking through you at the slot machines behind you. At that million mile stare, you know?
Yeah, one of the two.
Well, training camp has begun. The rookies and quarterbacks reported, I think it was Sunday, and actual legit training camp is going on. The players are in the facility. Balls are being thrown. You can smell the grass. You know, you can hear the sprinklers kicking off. You know, basically like the opening scene from Hard Knocks, like the intro to Hard Knocks, where it's just like You can hear the bags getting hit. The jugs machine is working.
The chatter in the background.
Oh God. It just feels good. Like we've had all these, cause you know, the NFL is the master of taking over the news cycle for the entire year, right? Yeah. They separate free agency from the draft, from the combine. Like, you know, they turn the draft into a 3-day event. It used to be like one afternoon in like a hotel lobby, you know, like a conference center. And now
the Marriott down the street,
right? Is now it's a whole event.
Fuck, everyone's smoking and shit, drinking. Yeah. All fucked up.
So the NFL, you get all these like start, stop, start, stop, start, stop. But now that once training camp begins, now that training camp underway, it's just all momentum building. It's still kind of nothing, but it's momentum now. You know what I mean? Now that pads are going to come on soon. Preseason's going to start in a few weeks. Then bam, season open.
Ready.
It's happening, baby.
It's very close. We're very close. You know what? You know what? This really reminds me of the start of the season is when they start painting the lines on the grass.
Yeah.
It's like, that's just like, ah, you got
high school
string.
Football, right? When they start cleaning up the field a little bit. Cause I like the soccer players and like band screwed it up. Got to make it back to the gridiron.
Oh man. You don't get that like high box streaking for the soccer team anymore. Yeah. Like you're covered over with grass. Like it's good to go. Yeah. I'm ready.
Yeah. And with training camp, you get legit press conferences. Cause John Gruden, when he very first signed to the Raiders, he was talking to everybody, talking to fans, whoever had a microphone and a camera, he was there. And then started out 4-12 and you got a little quiet, right?
Yeah.
Traded some guys, got a little quiet. But when he's, you know, when he's forced to talk, he does. And of course, when training camp gets going, we get to hear from Chucky himself. So he said a lot of things on Tuesday. We're recording this on a Wednesday, so it was yesterday. There was two main things he brought up that I think require the most discussion. So outside of those two things, he talked a lot about, you know, Derek Carr, and like he was asked about a lot of specific players, et cetera. And, you know, there's not a lot. When you're listening to a coach in July, there's not a whole lot you can take as gospel, you know?
Yeah.
Just hyping things up. Every guy's great. But sometimes you can read between the lines and get some ideas. So he was asked about Damon Arnett and the second. Obviously, Damon Arnett's been in the news a lot because he's not taking first string reps. He was a first round pick last season. And if you can't start in the Raiders secondary,
that's a rough go for you.
Where are you going to start? So here's Coach Gruden on all that jazz.
Well, we drafted Arnett in the first round. He was an opening day starter, so he's a big part of us moving forward. He had the virus. He had an injury to his thumb. He also had concussion injury. So he was an incomplete performer for us last year, but he's as good a corner as we have talent wise on this team. We think he and Trayvon Mullen, Casey Hayward, some of the other people that are in the mix now give us depth, competition, and some interesting matchups. So I'm fired up about the secondary. The safety is completely unsolved. We've got some high draft choices there playing down. We got some high draft choices playing deep, and we have a great secondary coach in Ron Miles. So if I'm a Raider fan, I'm coming out here watching practice. I'm going to keep a close eye on this secondary. It should be a strength of ours. If it isn't, we've made some real mistakes.
Okay, so lots to unpack there. The last one, I think, is the biggest one. He expects the Las Vegas Raiders secondary to be a strength of the Las Vegas Raiders. Are you buying at all what John Gruden is selling?
That statement made me think the whole thing was bullshit.
Like he said, like the first like 45 seconds, you're like, okay, I believe you. And then he's like, yeah, you should be fired up. Our secondary is going to be the shit. You're like, that just made you a liar.
Look, they're not good. They haven't played well. You have a couple of guys who have had flashes here and there, but nothing consistent.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see it. I don't see them being a strength on the team. And if he says that, Arnett being just as good as anyone on the team. I mean, it's one thing in shorts and helmets,
mm-hmm.
but it's another thing when you actually have to cover somebody who's trying to get open against you. I don't know, man. I just, that last sentence there just kind of killed it all for me. It's just, see, just more Gruden fluff.
Well, you see, that was the second to last sentence. His very last sentence, he was 100% right. If we're not good, we're doing something wrong.
Made some mistakes. Yeah,
yeah, we made some mistakes. Did make some mistakes. Yeah, no shit, John Gruden. No shit. Look, Jonathan Abram, first round pick. Damon Arnett, first round pick. Trevon Moehrig, first round pick. That doesn't even count Gary and Conley, who's no longer on the team. First round pick, right? Like, yeah. They've dumped, and this isn't, and that, those are just first round draft picks. Those are just first round draft picks, not expensive free agents, not second, third, fourth rounders, just first round draft picks. Obviously, with, you know, Moehrig, there's no way to tell, right? He's a rookie, he hasn't played yet, but like Abram, injured for a whole season, literally the worst safety in football last season. Damon Arnett couldn't stay on the field, not taking first team reps. So it's standard operating procedure for John Gruden to be like pumped up, excited, motivating, and also using this platform, knowing that his secondary is listening, to like listen to that and pay attention. But I think this is also Gruden a little bit kind of deferring some of the blame, where he's like, hey, we picked you as a first round pick. It's on you to live up to that, which has always been a Gruden problem, where it's like, no, he doesn't become first round talent because you picked him in the first round. Because
you picked him there, yeah.
Just because that's where you projected him, that doesn't mean that's where he is. He is who he is, whether he's a first rounder, third rounder, undrafted. But he uses that mentality of like, well, you know, we're making some mistakes if these guys don't pan out. Yeah, no goddamn shit, Gruden. No goddamn shit. You've made some mistakes with your secondary. Look, and they're not a lost cause, right? Especially with Trayvon Mullen, solid quality starter. Casey Hayward still got some good years left on him. No reason to be anything but optimistic for Trevon Moehrig, right? And then you bring back in some veterans and hopefully Abram gets his act together. Like, I think it's fair to say there's reason for optimism and to assume the ceiling is high for the secondary. But no question mistakes have been made. No question they've been terrible for multiple seasons. Like, it's to think it's a strength, like that would be the biggest 180 in the history of football if this secondary became a strength.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I think that Gus Bradley's presence is going to calm the secondary down. Mm-hmm. They still have to go out and compete. They still have to go out and play.
Yeah.
And say what you will about Gunther and his issues and his influence on the defense. He wasn't out on the field. Mm-hmm. And even though there was some coverage mistakes, and I attribute mostly the issues in the secondary with Gunther's schemes with like the wide open guys, like, oh crap, we didn't know what we were supposed to do, so the guy's wide open. Not like a lot of the things that was Arnett's issue. Arnett's issue wasn't really that. Arnett's issue was he just got beat consistently every single, like, 75% of the time.
Yeah.
And that's just a competition thing. And you don't need to have a thumb to knock a ball down. You may not be able to catch a lot of passes, but, you know, leading with your head, getting concussions 2 weeks in a row, you know, I don't know, man. It's just one of those things where it sounds good and it sounds like, okay, where I'm setting the table either way.
Yeah.
Right. I'm talking out of both sides of my face. I'm setting the table for if they improve, hey, I told you guys, these guys are going to be better. But if they don't, it's like, well, yeah, we made some mistakes and we're gonna go ahead and take a look at those and we're gonna rectify them, blah, 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 all this other bullshit. Get on the field and fucking play. Get on the field, play, do better. Don't worry about where you were drafted, first round, third round, whatever. Play up to your capabilities, do what you're supposed to do, and we won't have to worry about this shit. I think right now, a lot of the guys, and like you said, Gruden does this, he puts a lot of undue pressure on these players to perform up to expectations that, well, this I don't think anyone really thought that Arnett was a first round pick.
Yeah.
He wasn't a first round corner. So say, hey, you're going to be a cornerstone piece. Like, you draft guys in the first round to be cornerstone pieces of your franchise. Mm-hmm. And if you draft this guy, oh, you're going to be a cornerstone of our defense. Like, dude, he was never that. So instead of Arnett trying to be that guy, why don't you just try to be the best Arnett you can be? Instead of trying to be somebody else.
I do think that Gruden, Mayock, Bradley, like the crew has, even if not like publicly and vocally acknowledged how much they screwed up the secondary personnel wise, I think their actions have shown like, all right, we're like, let's start cleaning up some of these mistakes, bringing back in a veteran like Carl Joseph, bringing in Casey Hayward, you know, things like that. And then drafting a safety in the second round who was a first round talent, if not for an injury. Like, I think they're acknowledging that it's a problem, but it's just more just kind of like, I think they've done whatever they can possibly do personnel wise with the secondary. Same thing with the entire defense. And I sound like a broken record. It's whatever Gus Bradley can do with the pieces now. That's what it's come down to. Like it's can Gus Bradley make this crew work? Right. Cause you're not going to drastically change it personnel wise.
From Gus Bradley, I'm not worried about what slot there. Cause they're going to improve. They're going to improve their position in the rankings. How much? Who knows? As long as they get better on third down defense, and as long as they don't give up as many big plays, I think that's going to be a really, really big telltale sign for Gus Bradley on what he's doing with the defense. Mm-hmm. Because you're right. He can only do what he could do with what he has.
Yeah.
And unless a lot of these guys were just totally confused and lost, and they just snap out of it with Gus Bradley, which, I mean, has happened. I don't see that being a huge revelation on defense.
Speaking of Gus Bradley and that defense, here's Coach Gruden on exactly that.
Well, it's been fun to watch. No disrespect to Paul, but we have a completely different group of players too. But Gus is he's a high energy coach. He's upbeat, positive. He's philosophical. He's fun to be around. He makes you laugh, but he also pushes you. And I think what's going to make this defense go is how we rush the passer, how it goes up front. And Yannick is a difference maker. I mean, I feel him every time I see him on the grass. And Max is on the rise, I think another young player. Really impressed with Kuntz. Malcolm Kuntz has made an impression. And if we can improve up front, I think this defense will be much improved.
So a couple of things. Yes, disrespect to Paul Gunther. I think that's they're buddies. So I guess it's Gruden just like not trying to like stomp on the resume of his friend, which is fine for Gruden.
Take the temperature of the room, Gruden.
We can disrespect Paul Gunther
a fucking job.
We can disrespect Paul Gunther all we want. Thank you.
No
very
one's
much.
Giving Paul Gunther a fucking job anymore. You can say whatever the fuck you want. No one's gonna hire his ass. No one.
He's gonna be like Pee-wee football line coach or something like that. And even then they'll hate him. Imagine him installing that defense in like for a bunch of like 9-year olds. It's like, all right, this week we've got
a fucking book this thick.
We got 27 third down plays that we're gonna use. Memorize this.
The fuck?
Coach Gunther,
oh,
I can't
I
read.
Tried to coach him.
Figure it out. And he'll just blame the players. The more I hear about Paul Gunther, Gus Bradley, like the more like Gruden talks about him, Carr talks about him, the defense talks about him, his colleagues talk about him, like the more and more I like him, like the more he just sounds like who I want on this team, which is basically just setting me up for failure. it's just setting me up for really high expectations. I'm like, oh yeah, Gus Bradley's going to take basically the same defensive roster that gave up the most amount of points in Raiders history last season. No squad in Raiders history has given up more points than last year's defense. And I'm like, oh yeah, Gus Bradley's going to turn it all around. He's going to fix this. A three decades long problem that the Raiders have had with a bad defense. He's going to turn it around. No problem, because people like him. Why do I do this to myself, Soto? Why do I set myself up for absolute failure? It's like when every time I go to a strip club, I fall in love. And it's like, wow, man, I can't believe she didn't call me back.
That's
she's a stripper.
Fault.
You should know this.
That's not your fault. Strippers, that's what they do.
Yeah, they get me every time.
The Raiders do this. They've done this to me multiple times. They treat Marcus Allen like shit. Then he goes to the Chiefs, and he just fucking is Marcus Allen. He's the fucking man, okay? The Raiders make it to the Super Bowl They get their shit pushed in by their ex-coach. Mm-hmm. Fucking terrible. The Raiders start 4-2 with Campbell. He gets hurt. And they bring in Carson Palmer. Sweet. Nothing happens.
No, they trade their future away for Carson Palmer.
Oh, God. Because
they think they've got, like, a Super Bowl winning team.
Who the fuck told them that? Yeah. Fucking Hugh Jackson. Anyway, fucking 16-12-4. Carr gets hurt. Oh, sucks. 17 comes around and just play like shit. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me to be excited. Like, as much as you want to say that I was on the fucking playoff train last year with you and Rory, I really wasn't. I told you guys, I've been fucked over too many times. I will make plans for a playoff party when they're in the playoffs.
You said, for every time you said you don't believe in them, you three times said, we're going to the playoffs and I'm
stuck. I never said that.
Yes, you did.
I don't know, dude.
You're just as fired up as everybody.
Okay, I was fired up for how they were playing and after a win, but I'm not going to say playoffs. I will not say playoffs until they're in the fucking playoffs. And even then, I want to see it on, I wanted to see it in ink somewhere, no pencil.
Yeah. Gruden also used the line, we've got a whole new group of players, which, I mean, let's say, like, what realistically would be the biggest difference in personnel between on defense between last season and this season? Like, who would be, like, Morig, Hayward, Ngakoue?
Probably the line. All the defensive tackles pretty much are all new.
Yeah. So, like, Hankins and Jefferson? So, five different players? Max?
Yeah, like, Ngakoue, Jefferson, Thomas.
I'm saying starters, right? Oh. Like, you can't start, like, seven defensive tackles. So, like,
yeah.
What would our starting defense be that would look as the most difference? Morig, Hayward, Ngakoue, Hankins, Jefferson?
Yeah.
Maybe. And that's assuming Farrell isn't playing defensive tackle with Crosby on the outside. So like four and a half different players. It's not a completely different team. No. And that's assuming that those are all the start. Like those are all the, like those are all the starters. You know what I mean? Like Damon Arnett doesn't take over and become a starter, or, you know what I mean? Or like, Clay Farrell moves to the inside and basically becomes a starter. And Max Crosby, like, it's not that different of a team. It's again, it's all broken record. It all comes down to what Gus Bradley can do with the pieces that are there. Yannick Ngakoue was a giant splash, right? Great acquisition. He should be a difference maker. You should make that whole line better, the whole pass rush better. But outside of that, it's basically the same team.
Yeah, I mean, upgraded at safety. I mean, a lot of your secondary is the same. Mm-hmm. But that's just more Gruden shit, like, trying to back up Gunther. Like, oh, well, we were better. But you know what? It's not all Gunther's fault because we've got a lot of new players. We've got a whole new defense. Like, get the fuck out of here.
He's trying to help his boy. He's anything if not loyal. Another thing that Casey Seifer of Las Vegas Review Journal pointed out at the press conference. After Gruden went out of his way to praise him yesterday, Zay Jones is getting a lot of work / catching a lot of passes in a full team, first team drill. So that kind of got me thinking, because like when you think of like who's going to be starting for the Raiders at wide receiver and who's going to get a lot of playing time, Zay Jones is way down the list. Like Ruggs, Edwards, Brown, Renfrow, maybe even Snead before Jones. But because Zay Jones is the guy who's putting in the most work, the most conditioned, he's always the guy before and after practice catching passes from Derek Carr. Because he's that guy, I think John Gruden is going to force him into a little extra playing time, like kind of make him work more. So I asked you this, Soto. He's nowhere near the best receiver on the roster, but if he's the hardest working receiver on the roster, because this is a standard issue Gruden thing, right? Because he's said before, like, the best players on your team need to be the hardest workers, to set an example for the rest of the roster. Do you like this? Do you like Gruden making Zay Jones be a starter because he's such a hard worker, even though maybe there's a more talented, better wide receiver?
No.
Okay.
The best players should play. This is not fucking – you're not teaching them a lesson here, okay? This is money. People are getting paid. If you want to win, you put the best players on the field. And the problem that I see here is no one should be outshining anybody else as far as working hard. You shouldn't be praising somebody for working hard. You should be admonishing the rest of the team for not working as hard as that guy.
Why? You can do both.
No.
You come down on guys for not working hard and praise guys for – you can't praise a guy for working
that's,
hard.
That's your baseline now. That's your baseline. That's how you get the whole – that's how you create a new the fuck am I trying to say? I'm all medicined up right now.
I know. You look fucked up.
That's how new you make, create a new culture.
Right?
Create a new culture is you make that the baseline. Your hardest workers are your baseline. This is the minimum we're going to expect from you guys. This, you work hard, good. You're getting fucking paid. You're a professional athlete. You should work hard. Well, this guy's working harder. Well, why are you letting him outwork you?
Yeah. And that's the reward for being the hard worker, right? So, like, I'm kind of in between because you can't
put a guy who's inferior into the game, taking snaps like a guy who's a superior player because he works harder. You need to put the best.
That shows that if you work harder, you're going to get more reps and more opportunities, and therefore the rest of the team works harder because of it. That's my point. So I wouldn't say like I think like Rudy, right? Maybe the greatest sports movie of all time. Rudy did not deserve to be a starter or see the playing fields for Notre Dame, right? But because he just busted his ass, everyone worked harder, everyone unified a little bit more, and he got a little playing time. I think there's a fair middle ground there where like Zay Jones isn't a hack. You know, he belongs on an NFL roster. Like he belongs, you know, you should be an NFL wide receiver. You're not putting in there someone who's a liability.
No,
but let's say, you know, let's say Willie Snead is 8% better than Zay Jones, but Zay Jones works twice as hard. I think it's safe to say, look, let's make an example and make the hardest worker get some benefit for it, get some love for it, get some extra reps for it because he's the hardest worker. And hopefully everyone else will work, you know, 5 to 10% harder because we've shown as a coach, as an organization, we reward guys who bust their ass. So be a guy who busts their ass. And again, not saying you make some shitty liability player, throw him in there because he's the hardest worker. But if it's, you know, he's not quite as good, maybe you can make the rest of the team better.
I say you can give him a couple of snaps here and there, but if he doesn't produce, you can't keep putting him in there. You can't. Sure. Yeah. You know, because then it's like,
that sends another shitty message.
Yeah. It's I get what you're saying, and I'm starting to soften a little bit on it. You should get him some reps, but it shouldn't be any type of role to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
Because honestly, if you put a guy in there who's obviously inferior in talent to other players because he's a harder worker, that hard work is going to end up looking like brown nosing to the other players who are better. Oh, he's only getting in the game because he's sucking fucking Gruden's dick. And you don't want to have that either. You want to have, you know.
Well, I'm hoping that Gruden can translate to the team that hard work doesn't equal gargling my balls. Hard work equals you are better and therefore you get better opportunities. Like he needs to be able to make that message, you know, as opposed to like, he's doing what I like. Like he's painted his locker in my favorite colors. Like, no, he's doing what everyone should do is work hard. All 32 head coaches in the NFL want their players to do extra, work harder, burn the extra calories, stay after in practice. We all want that. And he's doing it. And there are rewards for that. And but you're right. If he makes it sound like, oh, he's my teacher's pet now because he works hard, bad message. But it's just like, hey, just normal life lesson. The harder workers get better opportunities and better results. And here's another example of it.
I think ultimately the harder, the extra work, the extra hard work has to result in something for the player. You have to see some improvement in his game because of that hard work. Cause then you can say, hey, look, he's gotten better because he's working hard. If he's working hard and he's still like by far the worst player in the unit, then it doesn't matter.
Well, you can't, I mean, and Derek Carr's talked about it multiple times. Like he's built a great chemistry with Zay Jones because of those reps. Like whether Zay Jones is like that much better as a wide receiver, we don't know, but we do know Derek Carr knows him like the back of his hand because he's thrown so many passes to him, which is obviously what the best example, of course, is Darren Waller, who everyone says same thing. He's the guy that's there after every practice, the hardest worker, and he's the best player on the team. So it's this hopefully will just reinforce the Darren Waller status, right? Hardest worker on our team is the best player on our team. Zay Jones is mimicking what the best player our team is doing. He's getting better, getting more opportunities. Derek Carr's found his groove with
him. Yeah, Foster Moreau is really benefiting from working with Waller because Waller is, like you said, the best player on the team, is a hard worker. He's like, yo, where are you going? Let's do a couple of this. Let's do a couple of that. Mm-hmm. And that Waller, that this is one thing. It was a while ago, but we were talking about Max Crosby and him not wanting to say anything his rookie year and like, oh, well, we started off well and then we took a dump and then the next season we did the same thing. It's like, if you're a talented player, if you're a starter like Crosby was and like Waller is, you're able to say whatever you want. Basically, you're a starting player on the team and you're like, hey, where are you guys going? Hey, let's do this. Hey, let's do that. Even other groups. So I mean, that's where the Grudenism comes into play. And when you see those offseason groups, you see Waller, you see Foster Moreau, you see Carrier, so all the tight end group is there. You see Zay Jones, your boy Hunter Renfro, all those dudes in there.
Hunter Renfro.
Fucking love it.
Speaking of leadership and Derek Carr, he did an interview with Vic Taffer of The Athletic this week and came out and talked about a lot of things, touched on two things specifically that I want to get into. He was asked about, remember the comments that Derek Carr made about, you know what, I don't have to be the highest paid player, you know, and all this kind of stuff. Derek Carr said, I'm in a place now where I'm 30 years old, year eight, where I, in the nicest way I can say this, I just don't care about that stuff. I've been the highest paid player. What did that get me? Nothing. I don't have a Super Bowl ring. You want to be paid what you're worth. You want to be paid in a respected way, but I don't need to be the highest paid player again. I don't need all that. I don't care to do that again, man. I just want a good team around me. I don't know how you're going to turn this into a Derek Carr hate session, because I know you're like racking your brain. I can hear the wheels in your turning, trying to think of how you can bash Derek Carr for this. But literally on today, where Aaron Rodgers is being a boo-hoo, look at me, I'm super sad press conference, on the first day he showed up to practice for in Green Bay for the Packers, Derek Carr is saying, I don't care about money. I want a Super Bowl.
First off, his name is Karen Rodgers.
Boo-hoo. My life boo-hoo is so
Karen
hard.
Rodgers.
I'm oh my gosh. No, I wanna pick where I play.
We'll see. We'll see. Mm. I'm not saying he's lying, but there does have to be,
I would say,
a prove it thing before he puts pen to paper.
I would say worst case scenario, Derek Carr's full of shit and he's telling his agent, make me the highest paid quarterback again, right? Hypothetical worst case scenario. This is still what you want to see from your quarterback if you're one of the other 52 guys on the team, right? Like if you're secretly being a conniving asshole in the background, you still want to hear this. You still want to say like, I just want the Super Bowl. He's kind of insinuating in like back entry ways, like I'll take less money so you can spend more money on getting us better players. You know, it's kind of in between the lines kind of mid. That's worst case scenario. And I still kind of like it. And again, even you can agree, Derek Carr, it's never been proven that he said something and did opposite.
No,
he's basically always
what he says is it.
He says what he's done. You know, he whatever he walks, whatever he talks is what he walks. And so he, like Tom Cable, Derek Carr gets the benefit of the doubt when he talks. And I believe him when he, like, yeah. On the flip side too, he's not coming off of a potential NFL MVP year like he did in 2016 when he got his last extension. So I think realistically, expecting to be the highest paid quarterback again isn't realistic. But this is what I want to hear from Derek Carr. Again, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, me. Derek Carr's like, I just want a Super Bowl for this team. Love it. Love it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, let me ask you a question. If he does want to be paid like the highest quarterback, do you do it?
No.
Yeah,
well,
I wouldn't either.
Well, time out. Maybe you get close because the salary cap's going to go huge next season, right? And so the number might be close to the highest paid, but it won't be as much of a percent.
I didn't say close to. I said the highest paid.
Even if he becomes the highest paid, it won't be as much of the salary cap as the current highest paid. If that makes sense.
I still don't do it. I still wouldn't do it.
The other thing you brought up was the clear thing that he needs, that I've been saying he needs to work on, is those fumbling issues, right? Biggest thing he's got to work on. 11 fumbles last season. Major issue for Carr. Even his biggest fans have to admit, like, oh, God, dude, you got to hang on to that ball.
Rough.
And he addressed it, right? Vic Tafer asked him about it. And he said, we've watched every single fumble. And we were honest about what was the reasoning behind them. Because it's fair to say, like, sometimes, you know, if you're blindsided and you're in the pocket.
Or you're winding up the throw and he hits your arm.
Yeah, some
like
random
that.
Guy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's you know, that's fair. I think it's like some of them were clearly his fault. Some of them, even, you know, even the most sure-handed quarterback could have lost one there. And we rep the ones that I control every day. Every day they're doing reps to make sure he doesn't fumble in those ones. All offseason, we repped it. You got eight people ripping my arms apart, slapping my hands, and trying to rip the ball out of my hands as I am just naturally trying to grow through a progression. It's not just a drill. I am doing it with the same body posture that I would in a game. I am trying my best to do that better. I know that ball is everyone's livelihood, and whether it's my fault or not, I am holding it. So I have to do a better job, whether it's a read or a check, whether it's certain looks, making it easier on someone else, not doing too much. There is a lot that goes into it. We're even repping the heck out of it. Which,
whoa, that's strong words for him. Right? The heck out of it?
He almost wanted to say H-E double hockey stick. But
he
hit the brake pads. He hit the brake pads, Mr. Potty Mouth Derek Carr. So a couple things out of this. One, this definitely is another yet the 100th example of Derek Carr always working on his weaknesses. He's gotten better under pressure. Still not great, but he has gotten better under John Gruden under pressure. He's moving around the pocket better under John Gruden. He's threw the ball deep more last season than he had ever under John Gruden, right? So all the things that have been his problem, he's either fixed it or has improved his weaknesses, right? So this is just another example of, like, every single day we're working on me not fumbling. Two, and most importantly, hopefully this just turns into less fumbles. Hopefully, you know what I mean? If we can like cut his number of fumbles in half, get to like 5 or 6, that's a boom. Like, that's game. Turnovers are game changers. Absolute game changers. And if Derek Carr can cut his fumbles in half by doing all these drills, that's easily, like, that could be the difference between being 11-6 and being 7-10. I still have to do the math with these new 17 game seasons throwing me off.
Well, you can look at it a couple different ways. Number one, like you said, he's working on it. It should improve. You're working on something specific. So that specific thing should improve. But like you said last week, his fumble issues aren't a one-year thing.
Yeah.
So what the fuck was he doing these last few years? Was he just not, was he not working on it? I'm assuming he had been working on it the last few years and it hadn't gotten any better.
It may not have been a priority because his first year
it
under
should
Gruden,
goddamn well be.
Well, his first year under Gruden, it was what, 12 fumbles? And
12.
Then the season before, after that, I think it was 7. So you're like, it's an improvement.
12, 8, and then 11.
8 and 11, right? So he had 4 last year. You're like, okay, good. He's trending in the right direction. Maybe it's not quite as much of a focus. And then, boom, he blows up to 11 again. You're like, okay, this problem isn't fixed.
I don't know, man. Look, 8 lost fumbles. We're not talking total fumbles, but 8 lost fumbles. That's one every other game. That's a lot. That's a lot of fucking fumbles.
A ton.
Even 8 is
more,
too much.
It's the most in the league.
Yeah, it's 8 is too much. So for you to say that, oh, yeah, he's trending in the right direction, that's like, oh, this guy's doing really well. So stop working as hard as you're working because you're trending in the right direction. I don't see that being the case. I see, you know, knowing what I know of Derek Carr, he does want to work on his deficiencies. So even though he has been working on this, knowing that and believing that he has been working on his fumbles that whole time, mm-hmm. and there's not really that much of improvement, I just don't see there being too much of a difference. He is who he is. In year 8, you are who you fucking are. That's it. I think we've seen the best of Derek Carr as a passer last year. That's probably that's as good as he's going to get. Can he get better people around him to help his numbers a little bit here and there? Yeah, but at year 8, you are who you are.
people said he was the best he was going to be in 2016, and he was better than that last year. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe
it was a little bit better.
Maybe, yeah. Right? Like, hey, wait, we're comparing it, like, you know, in seven seasons.
If he was, if he's the same as he was last year, I'm good with that. Mm-hmm. If his stats are the same, you know, if you get a better running game, the defense isn't his dog shit. You know, gets you a little bit better turnovers, doesn't give up as many big plays.
If the defense was above average, we're deep in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
We're deep into the – if we were just above average, we're deep in the playoffs.
And look.
And everyone's talking about how great Carr is. You know what I mean?
You can be giving up a lot of yards a game. You can be giving up even a lot of points a game. As long as you don't give up big plays and as long as you get turnovers, you're going to be okay. And that's the problem with the team is – They did all four. They gave up a lot of yards. They gave up a lot of points. They gave up a lot of big plays, and then they get turnovers. So,
but they made it up by missing all those tackles.
That is true. That is very true. And they kicking a lot of field goals in the red zone.
Support for the Autumn Windbags is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below the waist grooming, the champions of the world. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped just launched their fourth generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right, 4.0. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you, 20% off. That's one-fifth, one of every $5. And free worldwide shipping with the code WINDBAGS. WINDBAGS at manscaped.com. I use it myself. It's hot, right? Get a little extra, you know, clean things up down there, a little extra space. It's great. And again, it's mostly for the wife, right? It's mostly for the wife. Clean all that stuff up. Makes her happy down there. And most importantly, make sure you don't look bigger. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's like having like a tree trying to burst through like a canopy of a forest. If the rest of that rainforest wasn't there, that tree would look bigger.
Who doesn't girthy want that? And veiny?
Yeah. The girthy, veiny tree.
The issue that I have with my previous manscaping, not with Manscaped, but previous manscaping, is that second day itch.
Yeah.
You don't really get that with the Manscaped, and it's easy to use, and you can use it every couple days. You don't have to like wait for the hair to get super long to use it again. So, I make it a part of my routine. You can use it in the shower, which is how I use it. Mm-hmm. You get it wet. It's all good. And the vibration feels good on your balls.
I like to do it standing on my dining room table in front of friends and family. Leg up. Yeah, okay. Just to make sure that everyone can see what I'm doing. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code WINDBAGS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping worldwide at manscaped.com and use promo code WINDBAGS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. So Rodney Hudson, back in the news.
This pissed me off.
I'm going to keep following Rodney. Because generally it's kind of like, if you were a Raider and then you leave, I'm not done with you. It's just no longer, I'm not going to burn calories following up with you. But Rodney, I am, because he was so good, was a leader, did so much for us. I'm like, I'm kind of curious. One, just out of just like an emotional attachment. And two, I'm very curious to see who helped more. Did Derek Carr pre-snap make Rodney Hudson better? Or did Rodney Hudson pre-snap make Derek Carr better? I'm very curious to see what that's going to be like with Rodney Hudson in Arizona and with Derek Carr still here in Las Vegas, what that's going to look like. It's a storyline, one of 1,000 storylines I'll be following this upcoming season. But remember last season how pissed we were that Rodney Hudson didn't make the Pro Bowl. He was the best player on the team, has been for a long time. He's missed like one game in like 4 seasons.
4 years, yeah.
He hadn't given up a sack in 2 seasons and yet didn't make the Pro Bowl. We're like, okay, when it comes to linemen, like the Pro Bowl, it's a lot of just like politics and popularity anyway. With linemen, even more so. It's basically just who's ever paid the most. That's who makes, like the two guys ahead of him that made the Pro Bowl in the AFC, they're the two highest paid centers in the AFC. It was as simple as that. I think people just looked at that and went that way. Another part is Pro Football Focus does a lot of rankings. And I look at Pro Football's focus and that as a stat the same way I look at like time of possession. It's okay. It's a stat that could tell you something, but it certainly doesn't tell you the whole truth. And it can be very misleading, right? Pro Football Focus last year had Rodney Hudson as the seventh best center in football. Seventh. This year, Pro Football Focus released their a little graphic of all their starting linemen who are all the best at their position. Rodney Hudson, they're saying, is the number one PFF graded center in all of football. He was seventh last year. He's 1 year older in a new system, in a new state, and they're saying, okay, now he's the best. I'm the last person in the world, Soto, that uses this like, oh, conspiracy theory, the league hates the Raiders, the media hates the Raiders. Like, there's clearly certain media members and individuals who hate the Raiders, but generally I'm like, okay, it's a little bit of a bigger conspiracy theory. I don't know how else to explain this. When the reason he was seventh last year is because he was older, because he's old. 1 year later,
older.
He's 1 year older now, and they made him number one. Why? Because his jersey went from black to red?
Yep. That is exactly why.
Get the fuck out of here.
Super bullshit is what it is. Look, Rodney Hudson knew this offense like the back of his hand. He knew all the protections. He knew everything. He was the man. He knew everything. So all of a sudden, you're going to another offensive line who is okay. It's not great. And now you're all of a sudden you jump up six spots because you go from I just don't understand what the reasoning is behind this. How are they making him the top center in the league when he had a pretty decent offensive line to work with last year and he was number seven? And he's a year older, and that was one of the reasons why they made him number seven, was because he was a year older.
Because his jersey changed colors. I guess that's
fucking bullshit, man. And this is what really kills me about the Raiders not winning. It's like, when you've been losing for so long, people could do this to you. You know, yeah. People could just do this to you, and like, you don't really have a leg to stand on. Because let's say, for example, he goes to Arizona. Arizona wins more games than the Raiders. Well, you know, he's got improvement with Rodney Hudson, and he was much better. But that's why we just got to win and shut everyone the fuck up.
And stuff like this happens all the time. Like, this is why, like, you put so many, like, Bleacher Report rankings and stuff in a rundown. I'm like, yeah, sometimes we'll do them, sometimes we don't. Because they just mean so little, and they're so full of biases and other, like, motivations. It's just like not really worth, you know, we do an hour and 15 minutes or so once a week. Like, we got a lot we got to get into in that short period of time. But when it's this blatant, when it's this big of a slap in your face and this obvious that just because he's no longer a Raider, he went from seventh to one, I can't help but bring it up. Like, this happens all the time, but to this degree, this flagrant?
I think someone at PFF did it just to fuck with us. I think so.
But like, let's see if we can get have Juan Soto actually go into cardiac arrest mid-show. Let's see if we can pull this off. How can we do that? Oh yeah, let's make Rodney Hudson number one.
I saw the alert on my phone. I'm like, you gotta be fucking shitting me. Hell no.
One thing that never really stops evolving is the consequences and repercussions of some of the Raiders' bigger trades the last couple seasons, Amari Cooper being one of them, Khalil Mack being the biggest one, obviously. I still like both those trades. And we've talked about it before. Even though we didn't get the personnel we wanted, we got the cap space, and two, the value of the trade. You know, the Raiders being bad with their the value of their draft pick. The Raiders being bad at drafting is a separate problem than the trades, right? It's like, I can make a ton of money, but if I waste it all on lottery tickets and strippers, like, that doesn't mean like I didn't make the good money. I'm good at making money. I'm bad at spending it. The Raiders were good at these trades and getting draft capital.
They got value for it.
They're just bad at drafting, right? They got their value. Our friend Marcus Mosher has been on the show, had an interesting thread on Twitter about Amari Cooper. He said the Amari Cooper, this was the 27th, so this was Tuesday. The Amari Cooper trade had so many negative ripple effects for the Raiders. Here was a quick thread on just how poorly things went for the Raiders and John Gruden since Amari Cooper. selected Jonathan Abram with the quick acquire from Dallas in 2019. We all know how bad Abram's paid. He's played in just 14 games in NFL career, gridded out as PFF's worst safety in the league last year. He had the second most penalties in the NFL and allowed 5 touchdowns.
Wait a second. Even though if PFF ranking him, he still was pretty bad. Maybe he's not the worst in actuality, but he's close.
Well, and again, the PFF grades, they're subjective, but there are objectively bad things about Jonathan Abram. Second most penalties in the NFL, allowed 5 touchdowns as a safety, right? So that's bad. But again, that doesn't mean that the trade for the first rounder and saving all that cap space was the bad move. It was the draft pick that was potentially the bad move. He continues, the Raiders then paid Terrell Williams in free agency to replace Amari Cooper. They paid him $21 million. I didn't do this math yet. They paid him $21 million for 42 receptions before releasing him in 2021. He got $500,000 for every catch that he made in a Raiders uniform. 500,000 American dollars, USD currency, for every reception that he made. Again, not a bad move. It's just John Gruden, poor at evaluating talent and bad with his money.
Yeah.
They also traded a third round pick for Antonio Brown, never played a snap for the team. That third round pick ended up becoming Deontay Johnson. Yeah. Antonio Brown
was balled out.
Yeah. Completely fell apart, destroyed. But the other part is I'm also not convinced that if John Gruden kept Amari Cooper, he wouldn't have also gone after Antonio Brown or Terrell Williams. Right? Like after losing Crabtree as well, it's not like we were like overflowing with quality receivers. You know, I still think John Gruden would have went after other big name receivers. After poor wide receiver play in 2019, the Raiders then used the number 12 pick on Henry Ruggs. So the Raiders ended up using the number 12 pick, a third round pick, and over $21 million in cap space to replace Amari Cooper. This doesn't even mention all the other wide receiver investments the team made during that time. So just trading a third round pick for Martavis Bryant. Remember that? That fell apart. Damn. Trading a fifth round pick for Zay Jones. He hasn't done shit yet, but like we talked about earlier in the show, will he have a bigger role? You
know, people are who they are, man. Come on. It's not like he's a first or second year guy.
Trading for Trevor Davis, drafting Bryan Edwards in the third round. So a couple things. Marcus brought up some interesting points, and I'm glad that I'm glad I read this and saw this timeline because it got me thinking. This proves to me how bad John Gruden has been at finding wide receivers. This doesn't tell me, and in all fairness to Marcus, he didn't say that all this was because the Raiders traded away Amari Cooper. He just said it had a lot of negative ripple effects. But I don't think the Amari Cooper trade caused all this. I think John Gruden still would have went after Antonio Brown. He still would have went after Terrell Williams. That first round pick was worth it because it came with all that salary cap. And the other part he doesn't bring up here, would we even want to pay Amari Cooper $22 million next year? No, definitely not. I wouldn't want to pay one wide receiver that kind of money. I don't think the Cowboys want to be on the hook for as much as they're paying Amari Cooper either. So I'm still glad that we traded Amari Cooper for that pick and for that draft capital. It just proves again that John Gruden's terrible at finding wide receivers. Two unrelated issues.
Yeah, you know, so I'm conflicted when it comes to this situation with Cooper because, like I said last week, if you're going to trade away these guys, you have to find a replacement. Mm-hmm. And they haven't. They haven't found a replacement for Mac. They haven't found a replacement for Cooper. And the thing is they've used a lot of capital that could have gone to other parts of the team to try to find that replacement. Mm-hmm. So it's not only the fact that you're using your valued capital to try to replace this one guy that you already had in house. Mm-hmm. It's the years and the time spent not getting production from that position.
Yeah,
I'm of the opinion that if you have a franchise type player, you need to keep them. Now you can't keep everybody, but if you have a Cooper on one side, you don't need an Antonio Brown on the other side. You don't need, you can put other guys that do things specifically, like a Hunter Renfro. Like you can have a complementary pieces to your main star. And that can help you because you don't need to have another star to pay him or even close to that star money. You got to pay your best players. You got to figure out a way to pay your best guys. You figured out a way to pay Derek Carr. You got to pay your best players. If you have those cornerstone pieces, you have to figure it out. You have to figure out a way to do it. And the Raiders are good with their money, man. They're good, but that was a tough one for me because they got a lot of stuff back, but they've been trying every year since to replace even a portion of his productivity, and they haven't been able to do it.
I really, really like our receiving corps this year.
Because personally, I like them too, but then on the field, I don't like them that much. They need to produce. They haven't produced. They haven't.
I like the ceiling, and I feel like it's built to be able to fill in the gaps if guys that are supposed to take jumps don't. You know what I mean? Like, if Hunter Renfro regresses, Willie Sneed's right there. If Henry Ruggs doesn't deliver,
John Brown's
right there, right? Zay Jones, Gruden's been talking about him forever, right? Like, he could jump in and feel like there's just so many guys that, and if they all suck ass, then we'll just do two tight end sets with two running back. With, you know what I mean? We'll do two running backs and two tight ends. We'll have Moreau, Waller, Jacobs and Drake do all the receptions for us, right? Like, I don't know. There's reasons for optimism for me.
Yeah, there is reason for optimism, but the thing you have to realize too is you have all these expectations and this high ceilings for these players, but you also have John Gruden who picked them, who hasn't had the best
track record of
pick. Yeah, it's like I like production. Mm-hmm. Who's produced? You can be this, you can be that, you can be, I was picked here, I was picked there, I'm this, I'm that, I can run this fast, I can do this, I'm working this hard. Okay, what do you do on the field? Let me see it. You know, and unfortunately, we haven't seen it from these guys.
You ready to do some what up windbacks?
Oh, God, I guess.
Are you okay? I'm trying to wrap this show up before you die right there on your microphone.
Oh, I've been blowing my nose like crazy this whole time.
I've been seeing it. I want to barf. Wesley Williams, I love the segment about the role reversal. No, it wasn't me being the power bottom this time. It was you.
Pole reversal.
Trying to pretend like you can say five good things about Derek Carr, which you half-assed and just scrubbed through. And I had to say five bad things about Derek Carr, which I did excellently because I took that segment seriously. I hope you guys do it for each player throughout the season. My only question is, you guys say that players love Carr, but do you feel like players respect his leadership as a winner, and will players run through a wall for a car? Weird choice of words, because Derek Carr hasn't been a winner the last few seasons because the team hasn't been winning games the last few seasons, which is partly on Carr, partly on the other 52 guys on the roster and the coaching staff. So I don't think there's any issue with any player on the team about Derek Carr, the leader, because we've only heard players go out of their way to say how good of a leader Derek Carr is. And again, I'm not expecting some player to be asked like, hey, do you think Derek Carr's a leader? And like Nicholas Morrow's like, no, fuck him. He sucks. But people ask like, oh, what's your take on Derek Carr? And they'll talk about how much he cares about him. What a great leader he is. Like, they go out of their way to say how good of a leader Derek Carr is. And again, there's different types of leaders. There's leaders that are rah, rah, in your face, yelling, motivating you that way. There's leaders who lead by example. There's leaders who lead with love. There's, you know, a lot of different ways to be a leader. Everything we've heard from Raiders has been Derek Carr is a leader that they love and respect.
Yeah. That's not an issue with Derek Carr. His teammates love him. I think what Wesley was doing is kind of trying to like pigeonhole us into an answer. Mm-hmm. Respect his leadership as a winner. Okay, well, he hasn't won, so how can you know? It's look, they respect his leadership. He's played well. He's improved. He had his best season last year.
There's a difference between losing. there's a difference between being a leader and being an authority, mm-hmm. right? There's a difference. Like if you're a kid in high school, your history teacher is an authority, right? Like he's in a position of authority and he can give you a grade and he can suspend you or whatever. But is he a leader? Is he someone that's going to like try to get you interested in the Renaissance? Is he someone that's going to like motivate you to do your homework? Like that's a leader versus an authority who's just been dubbed in charge and he has a clipboard, right? Kind of like winners in the NFL. Like if you have a Super Bowl ring, you're an authority. You're like, well, I've done it. I'm an authority. But it's your example and how you treat people and what you do in the practice field and what you do in the facility. Like that's what makes you a leader versus an authority. Derek Carr isn't an authority as a winner because he hasn't won a Super Bowl and he's only got one winning season. But he's a leader by example. He's a leader in the way that matters being a leader. I'd rather you be a leader than an authority. And Derek Carr is a leader.
When you're an authority, that's more often you're told this is your leader. Mm-hmm. When you're in a position of authority, if you're a true leader, even though you're told or maybe even not told, either way, you want to follow that person.
Yep.
And I think that Carr is a leader on the team and the team wants to follow him.
Mike Nezixer. Nezixer?
Nezixer.
Mike.
Nezixer.
Mike N. Good show, guys. Thank you, Mike. What are each of you looking forward to seeing coming into training camp? So I assume this means what you're looking forward to in training camp.
Sure.
Well, there's a ton of little things for me.
Like your dick?
Andre James. Can he fill in the shoes left by PFF's number one center
in the Rodney league.
Which wide receiver is going to grab Derek Carr's eye, right? Is it Henry Ruggs is going to take the jump we all want him to do? Is Brian Edwards going to take the jump we all want him to? Is John Brown going to be the next Nelson Aguilar? Will Zay Jones and all that hard work turn him? Kind of curious to see who Derek Carr kind of falls in love with in the receiving core. What the relationship's going to be like with the running backs, Josh Jacob, Kenyon Drake. Is Jacob still going to do like the vast majority of carries and Drake's just kind of a novelty act? Or are they going to split? Are they both basically going to do the exact same things, but they have different strengths, right? Like, I don't know. But those are all tiny things for me, Soto. The biggest thing is what does Gus Bradley do with his defense? That's it.
Yeah.
That is number one, two, three, four, and five in my top five things I'm looking forward to this camp. Can Gus Bradley turn this ragtag group of guys, who's basically the same group of dudes, plus Yannick, plus a safety, and have them go from the squad that had the most points scored on them in Raiders history and get them to at least approach average? That's the biggest thing.
Yeah. As optimistic as I am for this upcoming season, and I am very optimistic about the season, it's tough to be that optimistic when there are so many question marks up and down this team. Who's going to step up at wide receiver? You don't have that true number one wide receiver. How is the offensive line going to gel?
Yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah.
How is the running back tandem going to work? We don't know. How are the additions on the defensive line going to work? We don't know. What improvements are the linebackers going to make? We don't know. How is the secondary going to – who's going to start? How is it going to – there's – everyone but Derek Carr is a question mark. Every single level on offense and defense, other than your quarterback – there is a huge question mark, and that scares the holy shit out of me, because there's a lot of ifs going into this season, a lot, and everything has to fall into place. Now, granted, when you've seen teams take that next level, take that next step, it's because everything fell into place for them. You hear it all the time. You know what? We just didn't get hurt. All our guys stayed healthy. Everyone stepped up who needed to step up. Everyone had a career year in the same year. Everything just gelled. Everything just clicked. You hear that? Everything just clicked and everything just worked. So it's possible, and it has happened before, but goddamn, every single level except for the quarterback side. So you have the receiving, you have the line, the skill positions on offense. You have the line, the middle, the linebackers, and the secondary on defense all have huge question marks. And that's scary. So I'm looking to see a little bit more clarity in the training camp. I'm looking to see more clarity in those positions. Who's going to start on the line? How are they going to use the running backs? Who's stepping up in right receiver? Are the linebackers looking fresher? Are the linemen busy and are they flying across the field, the defensive linemen? Who's going to start in the secondary? How is that going to work for the other guys who aren't starting? Stuff like that.
Last one, and you can tell I picked this one. Kyle Taducci?
Taducci?
You say you're not a car hater, but four of the five best things about him have nothing to do with football or football skills. Ha ha, give it up, man. You're a car hater. This is to you, Soto. Carr throws 50-50 balls when he has the receivers that can do it. How many did he just throw up to Crabtree? Even Cooper a few times. Andre Holmes, two. Waller, exclamation points. I just wanted to bring up how you, once again, to end the show, how much you half-assed our role reversal segment last
year. I did not half-ass a role reversal segment, but
terrible.
The issues that we're seeing here with Carr is the similar things from last week or 2 weeks ago. We talked about how you get a conservative passer and a conservative play caller. It's going to make the passer more conservative. So Carr was in a little bit more open offense when he had Crabtree, when he had Holmes, when he had Cooper. So he was, it was built in for him to that was his shot. That was the ball to throw. On the flip side, I can actually give you specific examples. In the game that Sanjit talked about, okay, the Dolphins game, where they had Waller split out by himself and he didn't throw to him over and over and over and over. These are things that I'm talking about as far as him being a little too risk averse for my taste. I'm not the only person to say it. I think our last four guests have said the exact same thing. So as far as being a car hater, I'm not a car hater. I just finished saying that he's the only non-question mark on our team. So if you want to feel that I'm a car, if you want to say that I'm a car hater, I said that he was a squeaky clean guy off the field. He's a good face to your franchise. He's going to be good at press conference. He's going to be able to project confidence. He's a good leader for his team. His team wants to follow him. He can make an unknown guy a star. So if you want to, that's football. That's football related. So that's right now, fuck you, whatever the fuck your name is. That's two out of five that are on the field stuff. Actually, maybe two and a half because he's a leader. People want to follow him.
I think that's why you're sick today. Because you had to force yourself to say five good things about Derek Carr
today
last week. And your immune system just died.
Stupid shit like this. Like I'm a car hater when I'm completely not a car hater. Kyle the Pile. Talk shit.
Taducci.
Bullshit ass bullshit.
Well, that's you get some rest. Get some vitamin C and some fluids in you. Maybe take a little nappy poo.
Until then,
knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Help us help you by going to manscaped.com, the very best in male grooming, manscaped.com. And when you go there, tell them Windbags sent you by using promo code Windbags for 20% off and free shipping worldwide. Until next time, later.